This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Second hour of Sharp Money. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson are here. Let's head out. Welcome in our next guest, Josh Applebaum. It is usual spot here, and it is opening night in the National Football League. So I think everybody does. I think they all fall under this umbrella. Congratulations to all who celebrate. We finally made it, and I know Josh is one of them. All right, Josh, let's open with the game tonight. Lions-Chiefs, we've had movement here. A lot of it has to do with the status of Travis Kelce. What do you do as a guy who reads a lot into these splits and these line moves, but a lot of it has to do with injury?
Yeah, you're exactly right, JBT and Amal. And congrats to everyone here. Football is finally back in our lives, which is fantastic. But I look at this game in a couple different ways. So number one, let's just look at how the moves have gone down. Number one, we saw Kansas City open as high as a 7-point home favorite. They pretty much stayed 7, got down to 6.5, you know, pretty much sat there for much of the summer. And then as you mentioned, JBT, the news that Travis Kelce is questionable here, hyperextended his knee, may not play. We saw huge steam hit the Detroit Lions, caused this line to get down to 4.5. So on the one hand, think of it this way. If you had gotten an early, you know, Detroit plus 7, 6.5, now you go back KC minus 4.5. There's a pretty good middle there at this point. But looking at kind of what we're dealing with right now, I'm taking the points of the Detroit Lions here, guys. Number one, as we're waiting on the status of Travis Kelce, you did see a little bit of information come out. The Chiefs elevated a tight end from their practice squad, Matt Bushman. So does that mean that Kelce's out or it's just insurance if he's limited? Also, Chris Jones. I know Kelce's the big news here, but Chris Jones is one of the best defensive players in football. He's holding out. He's not expected to play. So if you look at just the movement toward Detroit, and I know you're getting the worst of the number at this point, plus 4.5. They could be worth a teaser, you know, 4.5 up to 10.5 going through a couple key numbers. But here are some system matches on Detroit. Even though you're not getting the best of it anymore, number one, you look at how contrarian they are in a heavily bet game. They're only getting 34% of bets tonight. So even though you have Kelce up in the air, it doesn't matter. The public is still pounding Kansas City. That creates a good opportunity to go the other way, bet against the public, take Detroit. But also these system matches, guys, if you look at primetime dogs as one of my best and favorite angles, when you get to these Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night games, just take the dog. Very simple, but the last 4 years, primetime dogs, 117-88 against the spread, 57%. Dan Campbell in particular has been great as a dog, 20-9 against the spread, 69%. Road dogs have been great, especially week one. Since 2016, they're 59% ATS. And you also look at Patrick Mahomes, as great as he is, you know, the Chiefs were just 5-10 ATS last year as a favorite. So obviously we're waiting on the news. You know, what will we see with Kelce? Is he officially out? Will he give it a go? I'm going to take the 4.5, guys. I got a lot of system matches on Detroit. They're super contrarian. Maybe this is a Chiefs short win here. Maybe Detroit wins, but I'm taking the points with the Lions tonight.
Love the breakdown of the statistics, especially in the first week of the season with the underdogs and in the primetime games. I want to switch to a game that's going to be marquee on Sunday, Cowboys and the Giants. Josh, where do you come out on this one? Dallas Cowboys, a slight favorite in this game.
Yeah, Amal, I'm going to take the points once again with the Giants. That's really my angle. You know, when I'm betting NFL, it's such a public sport. We even saw a new state legalized today. Kentucky joined the fun here, 35th state overall. But really, football is just a great sport to bet against the public because the public is so big. No other sport takes as much public action. So I'm typically dogs, typically unders, and that's where I'm seeing value here on the G-men. Now, Dallas opened around -3. They pretty much stayed there. Anytime they got up to 3.5, though, there's a lot of buyback in juiced-up Giants, +3.5, -120s out there. Now, the G-men are only getting around 45% of bets, so you're, again, betting against the public in a primetime game. Another primetime dog system match, 57% ATS. But here's where it gets even better, guys. Divisional dogs in week one, they're 18-8 against the spread, 69% the last 4 years. Dig a little deeper, Daniel Jones, you know, again, he got his money. Is he a good quarterback or not? That's, you know, leave that up to debate. But he's 26-15 against the spread as a dog in his career, 63%. Brian Daboll last year, 10-2 ATS as a dog, 83%. I just think this is such an important game where you got to get the hook. So shop around. There are some books out there with G-men +3.5, -120. I don't like buying points either, guys, but if you are really juiced low on the G-men, like, you know, +3 at even money, I don't hate, you know, buying that half point up to 3.5 at -120. So hook is critical here, but I got to go again, contrarian, with the G-men at home +3.5.
VSiN betting analyst Josh Applebaum with us. All right, let's go to one of the games that I am most excited for Sunday. San Francisco 49ers on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think this is probably going to be one of the most popular teaser legs out there. Josh, getting up from 2, 2.5 to 8.5. What do you make of the matchup?
I'm with you, JBT. Great teaser play here, 2.5 to up to 8.5 with Pittsburgh. Maybe you pair them here with the Jets on Monday night. Jets are 2.5. You can take them to 8.5 as well. But to me, obviously, we saw some news last night. Nick Bosa signs his contract. He's going to play. How effective will he be? Hasn't really been in camp at all. But we did see a little buyback. You know, San Fran opened laying 3. They got down all the way to San Fran -2. Bosa's going to play. Some of these books are now back up to 2.5. But it doesn't really change the fact that Pittsburgh, to me, is the value play, guys. They're only getting 34% of bets at DraftKings right now. So two-thirds of public bettors are going with San Fran, and this is also your most heavily bet 1 o'clock game. So with the public all over San Francisco, even with Bosa now playing, why did the line fall away from San Fran toward Pittsburgh? Tells me there's some Pittsburgh money out there. Again, you mentioned the teaser, JVT. I'll even look at just taking the 2.5, maybe even money line. Mike Tomlin, one of the best coaches as a dog. In his career as a dog, he's 51-27 ATS, 65% as a home dog, 15-4 against the spread, 79%. So, again, a lot of love for San Fran, but to me this is a play to back Pittsburgh at home.
Let's go to a game that I know JVT likes the Green Bay Packers in, taking on the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field in Chicago. This number has come down now in favor of the Green Bay Packers. Tell me where you come out on this one.
I'm with JBT on this one, Amal, because Green Bay, they've just been consistently getting sharp money pretty much all summer, but in particular, last few days, even into today. Because if you look at the opener here, you know, Chicago at home, they were as high as laying 3, laying 2.5. You saw Chicago immediately get down, or, you know, over the last week, get down to around 2.5, 2, even 1.5. And now today, guys, as you mentioned it, Amal, further love toward Green Bay. So, wise guys, they don't really, it seems like even though they missed the key number, they're still playing Green Bay, even maybe at a money line play here, because a lot of these books are down to now Chicago just -1. I see one book that may even hop the fence and, you know, go to a pick'em or a dog to fade with Green Bay. So as of now, Green Bay only getting 30% of bets. Another way to go contrarian here, pun intended, or maybe not, but no love for Jordan Love. Maybe that's a way to buy low on Green Bay here. And also road dogs in week 1, 59% against the spread. Divisional dogs, 69%. ATS, both of those are from 2016. So Justin Fields, again, he's only in his career 8-17 against the spread, 32%, 4-9 ATS at home. This play, you know, even if you miss the good, you know, 2.5, 2, I'd be looking at Green Bay. If you can give me a 1, I'll take the 1. But guys, this is becoming a money line play on Green Bay. They just look so sharp, and there's been no let up on the love for the Packers from the wise guys.
So Josh, as we look overall, I wanted to switch. How do your systems work when looking at college football on Saturdays? Are there angles that you can use in college football?
Yeah, so college football, JVT, one, I look for fishy lines where basically it's an unranked team versus a ranked team and the line's going their direction. I'll give an example, Notre Dame and NC State. That's your most heavily bet 12 o'clock game. Everyone and their mother's on Notre Dame. They've looked good so far. They're a ranked team. NC State is unranked. But even though NC State's only getting like 15% of bets, Notre Dame actually opened like -8.5. It's down to 7.5. It's juiced up like it may get down to 7. I really like NC State there +7.5. So to your point, JVT, college is a little bit different than NFL, but a lot of the same methods apply. If you're contrarian in a heavily bet game, the line's moving in your direction, you're unranked versus ranked, those are the spots I really love. So I like the Wolfpack +7.5 Saturday.
Josh, give people out there one piece of advice that they could apply to the 2023 NFL season that might be new bettors or not as experienced.
I would say them all, lean on dogs and unders. That's historically where we've seen the value, especially the last few years. But aside from that, if you can bet a game early in the week and kind of anticipate the line move, you know, that's great. But if you don't see an edge, I would wait until late in the week. You know, when you get to Saturday and even Sunday, that late movement is so critical. And, of course, shop for the best line. Don't be betting with just one sports book. Have multiple outs. You know, find the G-men getting the hook, you know, +3.5 versus just a book at 3. But a lot of great tips that we offer at VSiN, but to me, those are the really important ones.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this, Josh. I know you had the 4 games you wanted to go over. Were there any other games or sides in the NFL on Sunday that were just like right on the edge of maybe being a play according to your system?
Yeah, so I would look at the Houston Texans, guys. It sounds kind of crazy. You know, again, we expect them to be not a very good team this year, but Baltimore is a really popular play at home. They're getting like 80% of bets. But I noticed today, Baltimore opened, or today when you woke up, they were minus 10. They're getting down to 9.5 here. So somebody across the market likes Houston. If you look at those big dogs getting 7 or more, they're covering at around a 60% clip the last 3 years. So keep an eye on Houston if you can still find a plus 10.
You can follow him on Twitter at Josh_insights. Josh, appreciate it. So what's going on? Where can people find you this season?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Josh_insights. Obviously, doing the Morning Bets pod and Market Insights for VSiN, but also on the weekends, wake up early. The sweat, I'll be in the Boston studio at DraftKings, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Really excited about that.
Yeah, I saw the clip of you on the iPad doing some stuff in studio. Looks good. All right, buddy. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy opening night.
Thank you.
Looked like a regular who's the CNN guy? During the
Kornacki?
Yeah, there you go.
That's
NBC. Yeah, but you didn't have same team.
I saw the same clip, and I was like, wow, Josh looks really comfortable with that iPad and the touch screen and making things move over there. Looks like a pro.
That's right. You could never.
Nah, no shot.
At least you admit it.
Yeah. I got no problem.
You know what would happen? It would be like, I don't know if I should say this. I was recently at a fast food restaurant that has kiosks. And I guess someone got frustrated with the kiosk
and punched
it directly in the middle. That'd be a mall on a news network. Yeah. It's not working. It's not my fault. Boom.
I have a friend of mine. He punched the slot machine one time. His hand was bleeding. This lady looks over and he yells at her. He goes, what are you looking at? I mean, she saw death. I mean, it was pretty
such
bad.
Such an underrated line. I've never been able to use it properly.
What are you looking at?
You know what I mean? Such a good one. All right.
You obviously, you don't like it.
That's a good point. All right, we'll take our break. When we come back, Dustin has his plays. He's written them down. We're ready to hear from the big guy what it's going to be.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere. Works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/vsin. That's g.bank/vsin. It is Sharp Money. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher today. Amal and Dustin are here. We do have some news in the world of college football. I also wanted to hit for anybody who wasn't with us, too. I did want to note, because I did tell our audience earlier, we should tell our audience now if they're just joining us, if you want to do some research on it, Panthers, two starting wide receivers, DJ Chark, Adam Thielen, did not participate in practice today. We did have college football news comes down while we were talking with our guests. Tez Walker is not going to be cleared to play. Denied his appeal. He will be ineligible for the 2023 season.
Like, what are we doing? What are they doing? Because I don't want to associate with the NCAA. Like, for those that don't know, Tez Walker, his career started in 2020 where he was at a school that was an FCS program, and the season got canceled because of COVID. So then he transferred, and now they're holding that transfer against him, saying that as an undergrad, he's transferred too many times to be eligible.
Yeah, he started at North Carolina Central, then went to Kent State. I just don't get this. You know, Mack Brown had a great response. He goes, we have guys in their eighth year. Yeah. He's absolutely right.
The thing is, I saw someone bring up JT Daniels because he's on, like, his fifth school. Apparently, once you're a grad transfer, it's unlimited.
Yeah.
You can just keep going until you get your doctorate, apparently. Because JT Daniels is a year away from Tommy Boy.
That's right. I will say this. I think I know what this is about. The NCAA is dying. And so any little thing.
It's desperation.
Any little thing that they can do to show control, they are doing it. I mean, look at the name escapes me. Who's the defensive lineman for LSU that couldn't play?
Mason Smith.
All right, Mason Smith, right? You could easily have a situation where Smith appeals, and then you're like, all right, we'll let you play in arguably the biggest freaking game of the season, and then, you know, next week against whoever, Charleston Southern Tech, I don't know who they play.
Yeah.
Right? Then you can appeal and sit that one out or something like that. All this is the NCAA desperately grasping at any sense of power that they have to flex it before ultimately, just like the Pac-12, they dissolve or something else happens.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know what this hurts the most? It hurts North Carolina for the season, but I don't know what their ceiling is. It hurts Drake May. It's going to hurt Drake May's draft prospects and how he's evaluated. It's going to hurt him in the Heisman race. So, like, I couldn't recommend, even though it's 22-1 now, so the market's adjusted after week one where he wasn't great against South Carolina. But I think a lot of us were thinking that once Montez Walker was cleared, things would take off for Drake May, and he clearly missed him against South Carolina in the opener. I think this takes a big hit to that offense because, remember, they're replacing Josh Downs.
Downs was unbelievable for that team last year. A couple things. I don't think it hurts his draft stock at all. I do think it impacts him in terms of the Heisman and this offense
overall. Film, it could hurt the film, I should say, not the stock.
It's going to be decision-making, and he's going to have a great pro day. You know, everybody plays well when they've got a broomstick rushing them.
Do you think Sam Howell, Mitchell Trubisky hurt him in any way?
No. Not at all. You know, it's funny. People talk about that, those kinds of things. They always say with Ohio State, they go, Ohio State doesn't produce good quarterbacks. I'm like, you realize this is how stupid most college football fans are. The last first-round pick at quarterback Ohio State was Arch Schleister in 79 or 80, whatever year it was, and then Dwayne Haskins. And just because Dwayne Haskins didn't have a great career, and you look at Justin Fields gotten off to a bit of a slow start, Justin Fields has played with an anemic offensive line. What Sam Howell and what Mitchell Trubisky have done have no relevancy to me in terms of Drake May. Drake May is a completely separate entity. And, you know, look, he's gotten off to a good start with that victory against South Carolina.
Troy Smith, best Ohio State quarterback in the NFL.
I don't even need to. You got anything you want to add? I mean, that's, like, ridiculous.
Who's the better?
Who's been better?
Bobby Hoying's actually been better.
But was it in black and white? Was the forward pass?
Bobby Hoying? 2000 played for the Eagles?
Did he? Who's Bobby Hoying?
Hoying? Hoying are we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't even know if he's being for real or if he's being facetious
Bobby,
right now.
I'm Googling.
H-O-Y-I-N-G.
H-O-Y-I-N-G. Hoying.
He had a flat top. No idea. Yeah, I don't remember this dude.
That's the best quarterback in Ohio State
history.
He's
not better than
NFL.
Troy Smith. Troy Smith in a fill-in role was awesome.
He was 3-9-1 and threw 11 touchdowns to 15 interceptions.
Yeah, what did Troy Smith do?
Troy Smith was a much more serviceable option at quarterback in the NFL. Troy Smith
had the worst game in the history of college football. He was 4-for-11 for 35 yards against Florida.
8 touchdowns, 5 pickles.
I was going to say, he was .500, and he had a positive TD to interception ratio.
Look, the track record's not good.
No, I agree. They've never produced quarterbacks. And, you know, certain schools don't produce certain positions, and Ohio State is one that didn't produce quarterbacks.
All right, I know we're doing college football news here, but we did get something else come down right now. We hit on this yesterday, so it seems like it's almost officially official. Terry McLaurin upgraded to a full participant in practice.
That's big.
So positive. Sounds like he's going to be able to go for Washington. And bringing it back to what we talked about, your guy Sam Howell.
Real quick on Sam Howell. Forget what your opinion may be of him. I don't think – are you – where are you at with him, JVT?
The honest opinion is I just don't know. You don't know enough.
Nobody knows. Ron Rivera says he didn't know, and he watched him more than anyone.
I will say this.
I'm not taking 781's opinion on anything. Please continue.
When I watched that game against Dallas and you look at some of the numbers, I think he's a guy who invites a lot of pressure as a quarterback, which is never very good. You should get rid of the ball and not put your offensive line in the bad position. And – I think that if you're basing what you think of him this year off of that performance against Dallas, I would want you to watch that game against Dallas again.
FMK. Sam Howell, Desmond Ridder, Jordan Love.
What is FMK?
Blank, marry, kill.
Okay, so give me my three options again so I can write this down again.
Desmond Ridder.
Okay, so Desmond Ridder.
Sam Howell. Jordan Love.
Okay, so I'm going to – oh, that's easy. I'm going to
get marrying Jordan Love.
Yeah, marrying Jordan Love.
You love Jordan Love?
Let me isolate. Let's isolate this. Kill Sam Howell and then Desmond Ridder.
I saw enough from Desmond Ridder. I'm killing him.
Desmond Ridder should consider himself fortunate.
What'd you call him yesterday? The best bounce passer?
He's been the best bounce passer at UC since Nick Van Exel. He's terrible.
Do you understand for me and Amal to passionately side on the same side of a take how bad you have to be?
I'll just say this about him. So when I was watching the preseason, I think we talked about this one of the days I filled in.
Yes.
If you watch, like a lot of people were getting really randy. What was the game?
No, it was you and me were doing Saturday, and I told you I think he stinks, and you said I watched the film.
Yeah, what preseason game was it?
It was
they
first
had like a 10-minute opening drive.
Yeah, first or second one.
But so you watch what he's done in the preseason. It's a lot of first read and go or rollouts to cut the field in half so you don't have to do that much.
But by the way, also not accurate when he throws it to the guy in these easy throws.
So if you're in the National Football, you know what it reminded me of? Trubisky his rookie year. It's exactly what they did. It was QB a lot of
waggle.
One-read stuff, QB waggle, and making sure it's like, look, dude, it's like levels. It's if this guy's not open, it's this guy. And if those aren't open, then just run for 5 yards.
I think Trubisky's a very fair comp to Desmond Ridder. They're not accurate, but they're athletic, so people are enticed by them. And there are coordinators out there who see the skill set and go, I can scheme that up. I'm telling you right now, I believe in the process of scheming up someone you think who has special skills. He does not have good enough skills to scheme up.
The difference would be, and the roster of the whatever year Trubisky's best year was kind of escapes me, I would argue skill position-wise, Desmond Ridder has way better toys to play with than Mitch Trubisky had that big year that went to 12 games.
Probably right? ever.
Yeah. Not even close. Real quick, though, when I look at Washington and I look at Atlanta – who is a middle-of-the-pack quarterback for you in the National Football League? Just give me two guys that come
Ryan Tannehill.
Okay.
And there you go. Yeah,
okay, Tannehill. If you put Tannehill in Atlanta or in Washington.
Upgrade.
Washington's a playoff team.
Sure.
Yes.
Yep.
I mean, that's how bad the quarterback plays right now. I mean, you look on the perimeter, Dotson, Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and then you look at.
Elite defense.
To your point. You put Tannehill on Atlanta, they're favored to win the NFC South.
I agree.
Are they not?
I agree. Hold defense on. Is still bad, though. I don't think defense is
But I'm just – compare to where they're priced now, behind the New Orleans Saints. We all agree that Tannehill is an upgrade at the most important position. At the very least, they would be tied in terms of odds for New Orleans to win that division.
I'd say tied. New Orleans roster is still pretty good.
Plus 105 to win the division. Yeah. Falcons are 2-1.
Yeah, you're probably right because I tell you what, though, the Saints defense is elite. Nobody talks about how well they played the last 10 games of the year. They're awesome.
They're old, though.
You're not wrong.
Fair.
What's your take on Derek Carr?
I think that there's a real danger that last year was what we see from Derek Carr moving forward. I just don't know how. That my worry is Josh McDaniels, we saw it with Stidham at the very least. Josh McDaniels' offensive system does raise the floor of a quarterback. Stidham came in against San Francisco, looked absolutely tremendous.
Yeah.
And I think it is, to me, it is very worrisome to watch Derek Carr get Devontae Adams, get a system like he had with Josh McDaniels, and have his worst career year in multiple different senses.
I'm not holding anything that happened with Josh McDaniels charge against Derek Carr. Derek Carr is worse than the people who like him think he is, and better than the people who hate him think he is.
I completely agree with that assessment. Real quick, take on Jordan Love.
I think he's in an offensive system that's going to raise his floor, and he'll give you average quarterback play, and that's good enough in a division that I think is pretty weak.
Daniel Jones.
Ooh, I don't think he's that good of a passer yet.
I don't either.
You know what I mean?
Like, also, he doesn't have a strong arm, but he's accurate, and he's athletic.
Also, go back to Derek Carr. Some of the non-number stuff, what you hear and some of the actions off the field, you're kind of just like, I don't know if that really works in terms of leading a locker room. But that's either here or there. All right, we'll take our break on the other side. You know, let's talk a little bit more about North Carolina, huh? Because our next guest, Sean McDonough, was on the game last week. We'll get his thoughts on what looked like a physical Tar Heels team.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
NFL is here, folks, and you still have time to get a betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide has plenty of opportunities all season long. You get picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, and football contest strategies and more. If you want the best, most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, previews, now's the time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price on an annual subscription. Bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at VSIN.com/subscribe. We welcome back here on Sharp Money. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Let's welcome in our next guest. Sean McDonough is nice enough to be with us, ESPN college football announcer. Sean, thank you. We appreciate it. Let's start with this. Do you like pimento cheese?
Sure, who doesn't? I kind of like any kind of cheese, really. Probably why my cholesterol is a million. But, I would think I do, yes. I would say yes.
Did you try the new Chick-fil-A sandwich? Dustin was singing its praises. They have a honey pimento cheese sandwich or something like that? Are you in on that?
I have not tried that yet, but it sounds like something I'd be willing to try the next time I'm in the neighborhood of one of those establishments.
Sean McDonough with us. All right, let's talk a little bit about football. I want to talk about the team that you watched last week in North Carolina. One of the things that came out of that game, a lot of people noted physicality for UNC, that it looked a little bit different defensively. Did you come away with that same observation?
Oh, for sure. You know, they had the 9 sacks. They had 17 all of last year. You know, they told us in the meetings the night before, Gene Chizik, the defensive coordinator, you could kind of tell he felt like he didn't do a very good job last season, and that they were just too static, you know, in their structure and the way they played. They were going to be much more aggressive. You know, we talked to Cedric Gray, their terrific linebacker, the night before. He was excited about the fact that they were going to be much more aggressive. And, you know, they brought a lot of pressures. I think they were certainly helped by the fact that the South Carolina offensive line was not good. You know, I fear for Spencer Rattler's health and ability to survive the season if they continue to play like that. So, you know, they had a tough situation. They lost their starting right tackle in one of the first plays of the game on offense. But if they don't shore that up, they're going to have a long year. But, no, I was very impressed by North Carolina. You know, unfortunately, they got some really bad news today, I guess. I just read it that Tez Walker, the wide receiver, has been ruled ineligible for the year. You know, I think with him, you know, they had a chance to compete for the ACC title. Perhaps they still do, but it'll be a little bit harder without him.
Mr. McDonough, great to have you back on with us. We had you during the NHL playoffs. And
thanks, Amal. Good to be with you and Jonathan.
Thank you. I tell you what, we see Sam Howell transfer and the impact that he's had for Notre Dame. As we continue to go forward and the transfer portal being now just basically free agency, could teams and programs, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, look to poach somebody as good as this without necessarily recruiting and developing their own guys? Because to me, if you put Sam Hartman on one of these teams, they're the favorite to win the national title.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unbelievable pickup for Notre Dame. You know, you wouldn't think of Notre Dame as the kind of school that would spend money in NIL or that sort of thing to get somebody, whereas obviously other schools are spending lots of money to go do that. But yeah, that's, I think, going to be a situation. We're seeing it here, right, in their opponent on Saturday, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Brennan Armstrong is going to be the starting quarterback for NC State. He had 1 year left. You know, he came from Virginia, where 2 years ago he had a tremendous season. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and UVA had one of the best offenses. Then they had a coaching change, and, you know, it just wasn't a good fit for him, you know, or the team, obviously. And then they dealt with that horrific tragedy at the end of the year. So, yeah, I think we're just going to see more and more of that at quarterback. And, you know, for all of Drake May's connections, and we talked about North Carolina, his connections to North Carolina, you know, his dad played there, his brother was a basketball star. You know, there were some concerns at North Carolina that he might leave after last year and go someplace else. So, and if he wanted to do that, he would have obviously gotten a lot of money to go do it. So, yeah, I think you're on to something that's probably going to happen over and over again. Now, you can't really plan that way, because if you plan, well, we won't develop anybody, we'll just go poach a great quarterback from somebody else, and you don't get them, then you're stuck. So you better have a fallback plan.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy with May. When you get a quarterback announcing on Twitter last year, I'm coming back, but not because he wasn't going to go to the NFL, but because he just wasn't going to transfer, which is where we're at this point right now. All right, so let's talk about NC State. Outside of Brennan Armstrong, when you're getting ready for this game and you're evaluating NC State, what position group sticks out to you?
Well, they're really good on defense. You know, they have an excellent corner in Aiden White. The linebacker, Peyton Wilson's been a really productive player for them for years. You know, they lost some starters from last year. I mean, they went 8-5 last year, as you guys know, with an offense that was pretty dreadful and a defense that was number one in the ACC in scoring and, you know, in the top 20 nationally in a lot of the key defensive categories. They just were so bad on offense that they had an 8-win season when, based on how good their defense and special teams were, they probably should have been better than that. But, you know, I worry a little bit after watching their opener against UConn. I know it's the opening game, and I think UConn's pretty good. I mean, as we know, they went to a bowl game last year, and Jim Moore did a terrific job and is doing a terrific job there, and he's an outstanding defensive coach, obviously. But the North Carolina State offense did not look good in that game. They scored 24 points. Their last touchdown drive was helped by 30 yards of penalties by UConn, so they really took advantage of the shorter field. And they didn't have a 20-yard play the whole night. You know, I think their longest pass was 18 yards and the longest run was 19 or vice versa, but they didn't have a 20-yard play. So, you know, if they don't get in the business of getting some explosive plays, you know, I think they're going to continue to struggle on offense, even with Armstrong reunited with the offensive coordinator, Robert Anai.
Mr. McDonough, break down how you see Clemson. That was a horrific loss for a program that has been dominant the last decade. Now to go to Duke and lose the opener. How does that shake things up for Dabo Swinney and company?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people now saying, you know, their era is over. I saw one quote, the Dabo dynasty is over. People are saying that's what you get for not getting in the transfer portal. Everybody else is. You need to, too. And perhaps there's some truth to that. I was actually at that game as a fan. You know, we had the game in Charlotte last Saturday, and we're here in Raleigh on Saturday. So I just stayed and went to the game. And you guys probably watched it, too. I mean, it wasn't a fluke. Duke was the better team, but they didn't fumble twice in the first half. You know, in key situations, they might have won the game, probably would have won the game more comfortably than they did. You know, if you didn't know, you know, what the lineage was, what the legacy was, the traditions of these two schools, you would have thought Duke was Clemson and the other way around. So, you know, I think there is reason for concern at Clemson. They certainly don't have the playmakers at wide receiver that they used to have. I would have questions about Klubnik at quarterback. And, you know, Duke's for real. I mean, their quarterback's legit. They had a lot of good athletes, a lot of good football players on both sides of the ball. Mike Elko's obviously a heck of a coach. And yeah, I think they're going to have another terrific season after winning 9 last year.
Sean McDonough with us, college football play-by-play voice for ESPN. Sean, really quick, I want to build on something that you just mentioned. Do you think maybe there is something to that point, though, about Clemson maybe needing to get a little bit more active or evolve here? Because I know Dabo hasn't wanted to do the whole transfer portal thing. But, like, when you see a guy like Keon Coleman, for example, who played at Michigan State, and you have a wide receiver room that wasn't really very good, you could have been in on a guy like that. Isn't there something to at least having or asking Dabo at some point to evolve in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. Although, you know, one of the things that I've always appreciated about Clemson, and we've done a zillion Clemson games here in the last many years, you know, they really have built a lot of their success on culture. You know, I remember him telling us stories. They'll have top recruits coming in for recruiting weekend. And if the players, the current players who are there hosting the recruits say, you know what, this guy might be a terrific player, but he's kind of a jerk and we don't think he'd fit in here, they stop recruiting him. So culture is really important. That being said, doesn't mean you can't do your research about a guy who you might take in the transfer portal and make sure he's going to be a good fit as a citizen, a student, whatever it is that you're looking for. So, you know, I just think, you know, it's an advantage that everybody has if they're willing to do it. In a place like Clemson with all their money, you know, they'd probably be pretty good in the transfer portal if they wanted to be. So I think he's going to have to rethink that. You know, it's kind of like what Coach K did. Late in his career when he didn't really want to get involved in the one-and-dones, but he did. And, you know, Duke went back to being a national power, not that they ever really disappeared from that, but they certainly became what Duke had been before, again, in basketball. So, yeah, I think he's probably going to have to do that, or if not, you know, he's going to watch a lot of talent go elsewhere that might have come to him.
Mr. McDonough, one final request, that you and Dave Pasch do not stop getting on these referees who are making dinner reservations on reviews. I mean, it is unbelievable. I always love when you jump down these guys' throats like, come on, what are we doing? And we've all made the call 10 minutes ago. We know what the decision is, and they take a month and a half.
Yeah, it's frustrating sometimes, and I should probably be calmer about it than I am. You know, these officials, by and large, do a good job, and they're human beings like the rest of us. And we all make mistakes, and I certainly made. I was just watching the tape of our game last week and counting some of mine. So, but it does all take longer, a lot longer sometimes than it should. And sometimes it's not just the call, right? They're going back to figure out where the ball should be, or did the clock stop or not stop, and what should the time be. So sometimes what seems obvious to us is obvious, but there are other things that go into the administration of the play that they're trying to figure out.
It goes back to my other idea. I have a plus size men's clothing brand idea, and I also say play clock on the reviews. If you can't get it done by 60 seconds, get out. The play stands. Sean McDonough.
Well, it's supposed to be right clear and obvious, right? Yep. So when it lasts 3 or 4 minutes, it's not clear and obvious. So to me, that's the whole bad thing about replay. You know, it was supposed to correct the obvious errors. You know, the old everybody in the bar yelling at the TV. He was out of bounds. You know,
Sean, we got to run. We're up against a hard out. Sorry to cut you off, but we appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Today is the best Thursday of the year because it's NFL opening night. Football's back, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is hooking new customers up with a can't-miss offer to celebrate. Place your first $5 NFL bet. Score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Don't wait till kickoff to get in on the hype. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code SHARP. New customers get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you sign up and you just bet $5. Code SHARP only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
John Von Tobel filling in for Patrick Maher. Amal and Dustin are here, of course, as well, here being the D Las Vegas. You want to come down and buy me a Labatt Blue? Do it. I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to stop you at all. Did you bet a touchdown scorer prop?
So maybe you guys can help me with this. Amal will definitely be the wet blanket here and be like, I don't like it. It's bad. It's bad business to bet those. They're trying to dupe you. But guess what? I like being duped. So here's
well,
where I'm at.
At least I'm glad you listen to me when I speak.
I know. I know exactly what you're going to say. It's like my parents. I anticipate before the argument what I'm going to be told I'm doing wrong. So the first one comes from Detroit. The next three are from Kansas City. I like the idea of looking at who's going to potentially pick up the slack with Kelce out tonight, or limited, we should say, because Mick Schaefer earlier said he's probably going to play, and he's going to play a few snaps, and there's going to be packages for him. The first one from Detroit is a guy who's been hyped up all offseason, and it sounds like they love him there, and that's Sam Laporta, plus 280 anytime touchdown.
I've got nothing.
Got nothing on Sam Laporta?
I mean, I would say, because here's my thing. I think, at least something personally, I find touchdown scorer markets to be somewhat random.
They are.
And I don't know. Like, I can go to a spiel about, like, how Sam Laporta could be effective, but I just don't know how I would personally quantify that there is value in betting him to do it.
So here's what I would say. Is last season the Chiefs allowed 9 touchdowns to tight ends.
Okay.
That put them at 1, 2, 3, 4, tied for 5th in the NFL for most touchdowns to tight ends. I think he's one of their better vertical threats. Remember, they have no Jameson Williams to start the season for 6 games. That would be part of the reason why I'm placing that. By the way, I don't expect you to love any of these because I like taking shots.
Okay, so let's add to that then. If we're going down that path, the Lions are going to run, right? That's what they want to do with their offense. Off of running, you go play action. A lot of the times, tight ends get involved up play action. Sam Laporta.
There. We're just looking for the justification to pull the trigger.
There you go. How about that, huh? You're wearing
How do you
Lions
feel, Judge?
Blue? You're wearing Lions teal, blue, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's Hawaii blue or Hawaiian blue, whatever.
Honolulu blue.
Honolulu blue.
There it is.
Look, I'm going to defer to JVT, and I'm going to defer to whatever you pick on this one. I'll be honest with you. I haven't even been paying attention. As soon as you told me it was a touchdown score, I was like, forget this.
Oh,
this is a waste
on.
Of
this
money.
This is fun. All right, look, no Kelce out. We need a number one weapon for Kansas City.
Kadarius Toney, have a nice day.
Kadarius Toney, 2-1 on the list.
Okay.
The next two are shots. I'm thinking over the middle, they need someone to make plays. They signed Richie James to be a slot guy. I watched Richie James in New York. He was an electric guy, tons of speed, has a chance at plus 480 to find the end zone.
He's so good, nobody wanted to take him on.
No, the Chiefs paid him good money.
Listen, I get it. You love Richie James way more than I do.
Yeah. Rich.
Schaefer brought him up too.
Yeah. And then the last one, guy's been great in camp.
Sky Moore.
No. I have him. I already have him over on receiving yards. Guy's been great in camp. He was a beast for a while at Clemson, but had an injury. And that's why his draft stock fell. Justin Ross plus 470.
Yeah. I think those were the two names that Schaefer mentioned, right? It was, who'd we just say? Wow, my mind is out of
Richie James.
Richie
Justin
James, thank
Ross.
You. Yeah. And Ross were the two names that were brought up when we talked with Schaefer out of Kansas City.
I think Toney, though. I'm going to put a little bit more on Toney at 2-1. I think Toney has a chance to be the explosive guy for that.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, you like shots? What do we get on Patrick Mahomes rushing touchdown?
Probably about 3-1.
Anytime or rushing?
I want rushing. Well, I mean, yeah.
Anytime. What's he going to go? Marcus Mariota throw the ball, get it tipped and catch it himself?
4-10.
There you go.
Oh, 3. I thought it was going to be 3.
The mobility, we know he's not the most, fleet of foot, but he is mobile. He can avoid pressure. We're all focusing.
No, that's interesting. Also because remember the last time we saw him, he had a leg injury.
Yep.
So he wasn't running. So I wonder if people are looking back at what he did late last year and forgetting, hey, the reason why he wasn't running for touchdowns is because he had a knee injury.
Still went over his rushing prop in the Super Bowl,
did he?
Correct?
If
I
remember
this
correctly.
Year, the one against San Francisco, I got lucky.
You got lucky?
Yes.
God, I got the butt.
By what, a half yard or something?
Well, no.
You don't remember this? Go ahead, explain.
No, please, you do. Because I was in line. I was so annoyed, I thought I lost.
I don't remember. I had not worked here yet, and I was blackout drunk.
So his rushing prop was somewhere around like 29 and a half, 28 and whatever.
34 and a half.
So I had bet it over. He goes over the rushing prop throughout the game.
A kneel or sack?
But, no, not even a kneel. Dustin, remember, I don't know if you remember the end of the game because you were blackout drunk. He runs backwards.
And
I think it was 2 consecutive plays. He ran backwards by about 4 or 5 yards. Here, it gets even better, but then he misses it by the hook. So I'm sitting here. I'm like, oh, great. And I remember it perfectly because I'm like, oh, cool, he's got it. Like, we're kind of near the end of the end game, right, where you know they're going to win. So I actually walk off to, like, get a drink or some food, and I just hear, like, hey, man,
I don't think you're going to get this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, the rushing prop. Like, he's fine. Oh. They're like, no, he's running backwards. And
I was in line with a friend of mine. We're lining up to cash some other tickets before the game had ended. And I go, well, this is going to be a loser. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, hold on a second.
Yeah,
like, we got a shot here. By the way, what's a worse beat? JVT's beat on that or my one bet on the Super Bowl between the Pats and the Seahawks? Russell Wilson, no interceptions, plus 135.
Man, you were celebrating that one, too. It was
as
over.
As soon as the ball gets down,
it
two
was over.
Gets over.
Yeah, you're done.
It's over. You're like, where am I spending? That's my thing is, like, how am I spending this money I'm about to win? And the second I start doing that, man, something happens.
You know what's funny, too? That Super Bowl, it was a great Super Bowl for me. I think I cleaned up on props. It was one of the better days in Super Bowl betting that I've ever had, but I'll never forget
Malcolm
the
Butler's only time he ever did anything in his life got in the way of you winning a bet.
Well, yeah, I remember Lombardi said, he goes, we had the play covered because he was with the Patriots at the time. I think they were 0 for 8 on third and one or fourth and one conversions with Marshawn Lynch in that situation that year. But, man, that was a brutal beat. Okay, quick question since we're talking about this. What is your worst beat, bad beat of all time?
Okay, I don't know if this is of all time, but this is somewhat fresh in the memory from a couple of years ago. You're going to be shocked. It's an NBA regular season game. The Bulls, I had laid 1.5 with the Bulls in a regular season game against the Thunder. They were up by 30 at halftime. They blew it. And they come down, the end of the game, this is the best part. Final possession, they're up by 4, and OKC's got the ball. And all the Bulls do is just, who cares? Just don't let them get to the rim. So they all just back off Mike Muscala, who nails a 3, so the Bulls can win by 1 after they were up by 30, and I had laid 1.5. That is one that comes into recent memory. And the best part was the people afterwards on social media going, oh, you should have played a money line. They're up by 30.
What are you doing?
Like, what are you telling me? Don't play a money line. I want to have it. They were up by 30. You don't get to come at me like that. Oh, it was abysmal. It was brutal.
What about you?
So three-team money line parlay in college football on a Saturday. And it's like the early slate, too. And two legs are down. They were both like plus 160, plus 210. But the anchor was like a plus 350 or $4 on Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern, I can't remember who they were playing. They somehow score throwing the ball, and they're an option team at the time. So the fact that they threw the ball, they go up. They're now up 2, and there's like 17 seconds left. The other team is about to accept the kickoff after Southern scores. It goes out of bound, illegal procedure. They get the ball at the 40. They complete 2 passes, and with 2 seconds left, kick like a 50-something yard field goal, walk off, win by 1. I lose the three-team money line parlay. It was like $10 to win $5,000.
It's good.
My worst one ever is one of the worst ever in the history is betting.
The Belk Bowl.
What happened in the
Belk Bowl? Was brutal.
Which one was that one?
Cincinnati.
Was it Northwest? No. I can't. Now I brought it up.
The famous Belk Bowl was Cincinnati.
Game in Charlotte?
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up. Continue.
Mets Braves playoff game total 7.5, 3-3. Robin Ventura hits a grand slam. Final score should have been 7-3. Robin Ventura gets mobbed by his teammates at first base, doesn't circle the bases. Instead of being a 7-3 final, the final score is 4-3 because instead of a grand slam, it becomes a single.
Oh, ridiculous. Yes, it was Duke Cincinnati. That was the infamous Belk Bowl.
What happened?
Well, apparently I have to look up exactly what it was. You know what's funny? I can recall that the Belk Bowl was a bad beat, but it was so long ago now that I can't even remember what exactly it was. What year was it?
2012.
Wow, was that far away?
You said it like it was yesterday. Yeah.
No, I just looked it up.
What happened, though?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I got to read the whole Wikipedia on the air?
No. Just give us – you guys don't remember?
I mean, Cincinnati won 48-34, but Cincinnati – so it was 16-17 at the half. Cincinnati scored 21 in the fourth – outscored them 21-10 in the fourth quarter to win. I don't remember what – I remember it being a big Twitter day. It was a big meltdown on Twitter day.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who will sit there and go, oh, that's a bad beat when a guy hits a shot at the end of the game. I'm like, dude, is this your first time watching basketball?
Okay, I'll have one to add in the last 30 seconds. 2 years ago was in the running for first place in a 6-week mini contest in the Super Contest. What I needed was I had Colts plus 3 in that game against the Buccaneers. They go up 24-10. Bucks come back, but they're in position to tie it, so I would have pushed and gotten a share of first place. Leonard Fournette rips off a run in the final minute.
Oh, I remember that one.
To get a touchdown instead of the field goal, I lose out on it. I only get 1,200.
When Keyshawn was with the Jets against Washington, they were an underdog. I took him on the money line as an 8-point dog. He scored the first touchdown. They said no good. If it was today, it would have been ruled good because they had replay.
All right, we got to talk about football today, though. We'll do that in the final hour, Sharp Money.